Bad boys, bad boys, what you gonna do? That is the song that leads us into the second break, because we're gonna introduce Fred Melms, the bad boy of law. I'm Kirk Bankstead. Welcome back to the Up North Podcast.
And I am Sarah Yacoub, happy to be co-hosting not only on this podcast, but here on News Talk 92.7 in Madison. For those of you catching us at other times, you can catch us on our website. And we are just excited to be here. That is upnorthpodcast.com. And you can subscribe to that podcast on Spotify and everywhere, Apple, where you find your podcast.
All right. Thanks, Sarah. So we're going to invite Fred Melms. So Fred Melms is my lawyer. And I discovered you, Fred, when I was being sued by the Lakeland Times for defamation. And I had never met a First Amendment lawyer. I never had to worry about being sued for defamation before, but this super PAC has definitely made me a target for some of these conservative groups and this conservative paper. So basically, Fred, for everybody listening, Fred makes sure that I don't get in trouble with what I say. But because he's such a brilliant lawyer, I was like, well, let's talk about this lawsuit about, let's talk about how do we protect some of these kids who are too young to get vaccinated. Their school boards are being overrun by these screaming kind of like harpy-like beings who are not in favor of their kids wearing masks, even though kids that age seemingly are just fine wearing masks, and they have been, you know, all last year. Fred, talk about, you know, give me your side of the story on how this, what interested you about this lawsuit, kind of what, our strategy is, how we had to get plaintiffs. I mean, it's going to be so interesting for people to kind of hear the lawyer side of this this thing.
Well, I mean, I didn't really get plaintiffs. You sort of organized a group of people who were angry about this. And, we chatted a little bit, and from there, some of them became plaintiffs. It's kind of an interesting area of law in that, you know, the last pandemic was in 1918, right? So we don't really have a lot of it to go off of. So you're sort of looking into other areas for strategies. I mean, effectively to make the school boards and, you know, parents do the right thing here and put masks on their kids, which seems like not very much to ask given the stakes here, when we've got, you know, thousands of people dying every week from this pandemic who otherwise wouldn't need to die. So it's really, I mean, the whole thing has been kind of mind blowing, but our approach, my approach to this is going to be sort of twofold and client dependent, but we've got a couple areas we're looking from. One is sort of public nuisance law, in which we'll be arguing more or less that, much like a polluter, this school is a daily super spreader event. And because this school, the school board brings the school together to be a daily super spreader event, they have an obligation to, you know, take some actions to try and limit the harm from that, from the children to the community, from the, you know, they go home, they take it back to their kids, to their parents, you know, they go home, they're sick, they wind up in community hospitals. I mean, the schools are causing sort of damage to the public as a whole here. And that's kind of what the first suit is, or the first part of the suit is attempting to address is that. And it's from that angle. It's from actually an environmental, most of the law, and it's actually environmental law. So it's kind of been interesting to, you know, write this complaint and work on a temporary restraining order.
You know, so Fred, let me stop you there. So, what can you, I mean, cause you've had to look at precedent, because we haven't had a pandemic in 100 years. So like, what are you researching that suggests that, you know, kind of looking at it in a pollution or environmental sort of way might be the strategy to go? Like, what other cases kind of have, you know, in your mind have been successful?
Well, it's not, Unfortunately, other people have tried this specific approach from the perspective of teachers, and it hasn't worked because the courts have just struck them down, saying this is an OSHA issue. OSHA should be handling this. So the difference between what we're going to do with our students is we're going to focus more on the effects of the community and take that angle differently. I guess I didn't bring my notes here, but there are a bunch of sort of very famous public nuisance case law that would be appropriate here. Let me open.
Fred, how does negligence play into this, if at all?
So we're not really bringing a negligence action. I didn't think that was necessarily going to be the best route here, because I think we can prove negligence, but the public nuisance stuff is really more strict liability than anything. So it's, did you do it? Did you not do it? There's no negligence analysis, which is pretty good. I think, well, we could argue negligence for the other part of this I'm bringing is going to be more of a, from a civil rights spin, where we're going to argue that the students have a civil right to be safe at school. And now the courts have been really, have basically refused to ever accept that the government has the responsibility to protect citizens. As you know, you went to law school, that just doesn't exist. They don't have that responsibility. You can never sue basically a police department or a government for failing to act unless there's very special circumstances. And those two are, you're either creating a special relationship or you've created the danger. And I think now this courts have not extended the special relationship to the student sort of teacher administrator relationship. They have said that's not a special relationship for the purposes of making that sort of claim. But I think here we have one because they did all of this last year. And I think we also have a similar claim that they created this danger by removing all of the sort of COVID mitigation strategies they had last year. So that's sort of the second way we're going to approach this this case here.
So I've got a question for you because, by the way, our the Minocqua Brewing Company Facebook page has been carpet bombed by the Trump cult in the last 24 hours or 48 hours. And so I've gotten a lot of bench warmer lawyers on the other side saying how we're going to lose and why. But something I've heard repeatedly is, you know, Governor Evers already tried to do a mask mandate, and it was overturned by the Supreme Court, the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Can you explain to the listeners and the viewers, you know, why what we're doing is different than what Governor Evers tried to do?
Well, the mask mandate itself wasn't thrown out. It was the process in which we established the mask mandate. So it wasn't the mandate. It was a process issue. So that's great. I mean, the people that keep telling me that mask mandates or that we hear on the radio or TV saying mask mandates are unconstitutional, I need them to point because I missed that day in law school. A section of the Constitution that says the state's police power extends up into the point of putting a piece of cloth on your face. There's no case law that says that. I believe either. So the analysis that one would use in just generally determining whether or not any police power action by the state that doesn't implicate a fundamental right is legal is just rational basis, and which is does the state have a rational basis for, you know, making this law, taking this action, and there's a pandemic, we're spreading disease to one another, put on a mask seems pretty rational to me. So they're all just wrong.
Fred, what's your take on the Delta variant and the fact that it seems like we have all this really good data to support the supposition? So last year we knew that this would happen because common sense, but we didn't really have the data. You know, the forest fire hadn't burned all the way through. Is your take on it that, you know, we now have all this really good data that tells us what sort of super spreader event we're dealing with?
I think it's helpful. I think I've gotten a really good expert. I'm still working with to finalize his report, but the data is definitely bad. and there's plenty of it, and it says that kids should be wearing masks, everyone should be wearing a mask, it stops the spread of disease, it will save lives. I mean, it's pretty black and white. Shockingly, the experts in this field know more than, you know, the political pundits who are attacking this idea.
The part that gets me is, you know, if I'm a teenager and nobody's telling me, hey, you might survive it, but you might spread it to someone who doesn't, whether it's your brother who has asthma or your grandparent, who wants to live with, I killed, you know, fill in your loved one blank because I got exposed. And so, you know, it seems like as adults, we have a responsibility to make sure that our kids aren't sort of walking themselves off a cliff here.
As adults, as parents, as just members of the community, we should all care a little bit more about our neighbor. And just put on the mask. It's not asking a lot, you know. It's not interfering with your day. It's not interfering with your ability to do anything. It's just put on the mask. And the people treating this like this is going to be the greatest, you know, it's the masking is the greatest threat to our Constitution since, the Civil War, it's just a mind-blowing opinion. When there are so many real threats to, you know, your constitutional rights that are going on every day.
Fred, let me ask, just so we clear, you're seeing all this stuff from the expert epidemiologists and the infectious disease experts, but to the point of actual, like, you're seeing this data too, where schools that have masks, mandatory masking for kids that are too young to get vaccinated, like, we have the data that the infection rates among these schools are way less than the ones who don't have that. I mean, right? You're getting tons of that data, right?
Yeah, it's there. It exists. We should be wearing masks. It's pretty settled. I mean, scientifically, it's settled. The reaction to it is just what's been the issue. There is no question about what we should be doing. It's, I mean, at least from sort of a rational background.
Let's go forward. You wanted to take this to federal court in Wisconsin, and there's two districts, and you had a strategy for that. I think people would want to know why you think that we have a better shot at helping kids in federal court versus some state courts.
Well, I think we're likely to get a slightly less political judge, because the counties we're in, we may not have judges that would necessarily, you know, they may just throw it out right away because Tucker Carlson told them to, and that's going to be an issue. So in federal court, we're going to have less political judges. They're appointed for life. They don't have to answer to, you know, an angry community because they've asked them to behave responsibly. I mean, they can just behave more. They can act more freely. They're also going to have a whole lot more experience dealing with kind of the issues we're bringing. I mean, specifically the fact that we're going to be suing the school district as a defendant class. Now, that doesn't ever happen, but federal judges deal with class action issues far more than local judges will. So they'll just have a better background from which to understand procedurally what's happening than the local judges will.
I want to follow up because you have been, you know, you've practiced in Wisconsin, you've seen different judges, and you've seen some of the politics. We've got about 3 minutes and probably about a minute and a half for you to respond, but why is Wisconsin, why are the judges in Wisconsin, the state judges or the county judges, so political? And shouldn't we be able to fix that? How do we fix that?
I mean, I don't think judges should be elected. I think they should be appointed. I think that's part of the problem. Although, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of something you accept and move on with. I don't exactly know what the solution is, but I mean, I think having appointed judges would generally be better. Sarah appears to have a plan though.
Sarah, what's your plan?
Accountability. I mean, we had judges appointed, and that ended up being all sorts of political, and, you know, it's an atmosphere where good judges, bad judges, there's not really a process that differentiates them. So those who are political, there's no mechanism that effectively tells them to knock it off. So, you know, it works for them.
So we've chosen to go the federal route. We hope it's less political. All three of us, I'm sure we all agree that putting masks on kids who are super spreaders is shouldn't be political in any way, shape, or form. It's only been made political by the right. It's only been made political by the folks who want to try to divide us as small town communities and try to rile up those to try to be more active and vote conservative about talking about freedom, et cetera, et cetera. And it shouldn't be political. And that's, and we're going to go to break pretty soon. And we are going to talk to Beth, who is from the Elmbrook Parents for Safe Open Schools in Waukesha County. And they are it's Waukesha. It's a very red county, but they care mostly and 100% about keeping their kids safe, and they don't want to get political about it. So while I'm political, Sarah's political, Fred is not political. I'm pulling him into this sphere a little bit, but we're going to talk to Beth, who is trying to protect kids without being political in a very red county. And it's going to be very interesting what she's got to say about what's happening in Waukesha. So can't wait to come back, listen to the break, and we'll be back in a little bit. Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? You chuck it on that one, you chuck it on this one, you chuck it on your mother and you chuck it on.